And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schleck. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me this afternoon, a Sunday afternoon pod, Michele Ibarra. Michele, what's up?
Well, it's very late here. So take whatever I say with a grain of salt because it's late. I had an amazing dinner, and there's that. So, I just warn you, whatever, get ready for anything.
I planned this. I set all this up so that we could just have just chaos pod. So I thought it'd be a good time to check in. We did this a little bit on Friday, but I always appreciate McKelly's analysis on younger players. And so I just could not shake the feeling that we needed to talk about this. And not only the Thunder team, but talk about some of these other teams that are perhaps ranked above the Thunder in the rankings that Sam Vecenie put out. So again, if you haven't read it, you can go to theathletic.com/downtodunk and get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. And also, if you sign up through that promo code, it tells The Athletic, hey, Down to Dunk is doing stuff for you, and it's all good. So if you could do that, that'd be wonderful. So the article is called Top 10 NBA Teams Based on Young Star Potential from Jazz and Suns to ... So the Thunder are ranked 9th on this list ahead of the Utah Jazz, who are ranked 10th. And I thought this might give way to talk a little bit about Poku. Did you see any of his game from today?
No, but I watched it. I wasn't able to get anything. I turned on as soon as Taylor texted us, and I the first possession was the one where he was waving his hands on the bench, and he basically caused a turnover just because I don't know what he was doing there.
I don't know.
Was he exciting for his teammates?
Well, he's waving his arms. I don't know. It looked like he does when he's calling for the ball, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, clearly.
He had a mask on because he's on the bench and you have to wear a mask on the bench. That was really something. It was one of my favorite moments of this tiny G League bubble season. Just an unbelievable moment. But the rest of his game was pretty impressive. He looked the most comfortable I have seen him since probably the preseason.
Yeah.
And which is good. I think that I hope that he is settling in, especially in the G League in that role. Cause he had a really nice game. He put up good counting stats, for probably the first time in the G League bubbles, 19 points, 10 boards, 4 assists, a steal and a block. Mm-hmm. Still no free throws.
Yeah,
which is it's becoming something. It doesn't make me worried about him. Someone asked me if I was worried. I'm not worried. It's just kind of a weird thing. Mm-hmm. This happened with Domas, where he went a ton of games without shooting a free throw.
Yeah. It doesn't was like 7, 10. Not yeah. like...
not all of
not,
them.
Not 3 months of yeah, no free throws.
It is wild. It doesn't... I don't think it means something one way or the other, though.
Mm-hmm.
There were some times in that game today where they could have potentially called something, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Perhaps they know about the streak.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
basically they need somebody to level Poku to make it count. They're not just going to hand it to him at this point.
Exactly.
You can't just hand it to him.
No.
So anyways, it was good to see him break out a little bit because it felt a little awkward, him being there and just kind of performing like he did in the NBA. And it's like, Oh boy, man. Like this gotta, we gotta do better than this. Yeah. It's gotta be better than this.
Yeah, I mean I tried to watch in Synergy all the Possession of Kuchevsky, and tomorrow we'll probably go back and watch today's game. Yeah. I was able to get one of the highlights, the behind the back dribble and then layup that he did. It was very, very cool. Yeah. I'm not too worried about Pokuševski. We knew that it was a reach, yeah. Or probably a try to swing for defenses.
Yeah.
And he's super young, so there is still a lot of time for him to become the player that I think OKC had in mind. I don't know if we should be worried. Maybe we should just put all our expectation on pause for a moment. Not just saying, well, it's worse than I expected. Because in reality, I remember us discussing Pokuševski in our Thunder After Dark segments. And we said, well, it's really hard to project from the second league in Greece to the NBA. It's so much difference that you almost don't have references. The game is completely different. And we got all excited about the first two games of preseason, and we shouldn't have. We should just be mindful about the fact that Theo Maledon was a player that was able to play in the EuroLeague.
Yeah.
And Pokuševski was playing at such a low level that all the things that he was doing were just things that, he like potential things, not sure things. And now we're seeing a player that when he's hot has skills that you, if they become consistent, you can say, oh boy, he is something special. If they remain like just highlights, then you tried. And it was the good thing to do, because again, I make probably with John the comparison, you could have had Sadiq Bey, who is a very good player and probably have a long career in the league. But you probably want to try to get something more. Shout out on the chat. The Fluky, the first one to tweet, pre-stream hype. Well, yeah, it will be something, this podcast, clearly. Hype from Greece. I don't know how to pronounce that name. Nick Dwyer from DC, Hoopstock 69, drunk Mickey. No, I'm not drunk. I'm just so tired. It's 11:30 here and it's late. So I was the one who cut out, or you? Because I was keeping Brody Bergen. Hello from Tulsa. Poku is the goat. Probably so. Look, Tolshoy from Copenhagen. Wow. It's late for you as well. Jay checking in. Early awake, 6 a.m. there. Well, this is my alarm for tomorrow because I need to watch the game. Pedro Menezes from Brazil. Shane Gardner, I think long-time listener from Kiaora. Kiaora is something. No, it's Kiaora is something else. Don't confuse me. It's late. From New Zealand. Ryan Woods from D.C. Alex Spears from Portland. Let's see. Let me see other guys here in the chat. Daniel Tomasi from UK, Jesse Smith, Miroslav Juric from Germany, Kevin Chan from San Jose, Sydney Huck from Stuttgart, Germany, and that's about it. Blue Man from Hawaii, Nate from Hawaii. Wow,
Hawaii.
Yeah,
I wish I was in Hawaii right now. That sounds delightful. Thanks for taking that over, Michele. Let's go to Sam Vecini's article at The Athletic. I want to go through these rankings, and let's do our own ranking. It's 12 players, and they're all 25 or younger. It starts with, the easiest two, and tell me if you question these two, and it's Shai and Dort, 1 and 2. Would you change that?
No, because I do think that Shai is a stud. He's probably going to either be one of the last that doesn't make it for the All-Star game, or probably because of some Federer missing time. He might even go to the All-Star game this season. He has been that good. The last two games were not great, but but he's awesome. And Dort, even if the shooting is not great, again, if at the beginning of the season, I said to you that after 20-something games, Dort would have shooting 32%.
Very happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
Very, very happy.
Yeah. Of course, he's down from 40-something percent, but that wasn't real.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, at the time, it was just like, do I know anything about anything? When he was shooting 42%, it was great. Like, don't get me wrong. It was wonderful. Yeah. But, I mean, it gives me this... What he's done so far gives me more hope of him being like a 36 to 38% three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Yeah, I agree with that. And sometimes he tries to do something more. Like, he had an off-the-dribble jumper, like completely unnecessary, but he did that. So he's really trying to leverage shooting. And he knows that he can attack. Now, also on that end, he's improving. He's causing a lot of turnovers, but I think he's trying to do stuff, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the year to try out anything you have in the bag.
Yeah, no doubt. Am I freezing for you still?
Not a lot.
Yeah,
not a lot.
I'm gonna relocate. My family went outside, which was my main concern. I'm gonna relocate. We can just do it live on the pod. I'm furious right now at how this is going.
Don't worry.
I don't know what's going on. You guys just join us on this little relocation.
Okay. And while Andrew is relocating, I will take over and just say something about Shea that I think is relevant. Now Andrew is completely gone. But I think this is really, really interesting. Last week, I prepared a few stats, but I wasn't able to get to those because we had a lot of stuff to talk about. But I think it's really interesting because at some moment, we discussed the fact that Shea's numbers are not great on defense. And I tried to understand why. And what I understood is when Shea is on the court, opponents are shooting 33 and change percent from three, which doesn't sound great, and it's not. They are shooting very well from the mid-range and very well from the rim. 61% from the rim, at the rim, 33%, 43% on mid-range and 33.2% on three-pointers. The volume of the three-pointers is the same whether he's on or off, but when he's off the court, somehow the efficiency drops in terms of percentage. Like, opponents are shooting 30% when he's off the court. Now, this got me thinking, because I said, well, is he him? Like, can a player deflate or inflate the percentage of the opponent's three-point shooting? I don't think that this is completely a fluke, in the sense that having a first line of defense a little bit worse and the ability of close out hard a little bit worse clearly can impact the three-point shooting percentage, but not to this degree, I think. So yeah, in some sense, Shea's defense doesn't help a lot. But also, OKC has been very lucky when he's off the court. And also, when he's off the court, it means that the best player on the opponent team are off as well. And so you can explain a little bit of that by just saying, well, he's off. The other team is having like probably worst player on. And this is how you get to that number. A few things on Dort. Hey, new room. Okay. I just digress a bit on the fact that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, when he's off the court, the opponent team's shooting 30% from three, whereas when he's on the court, the percentage goes up to 33.2%. This is from Clean the Glass a few days ago. I think that, again, to summarize what I said, he might be a little bit responsible in terms of closeouts and stuff like that, but I think there is also some randomness and the fact that starters are out and so the opponent are shooting a little bit worse.
All that to say, Shai and Dort, number one and number two, and I think that really it's tier one, Shai, tier two, Lu Dort, and then there's whatever tier three is. Who's your
What's tier two for you?
Like high level starter, like mid level to high level starter.
Okay. So you think that is likely that Dort will be a good starter on winning teams?
I do. Okay. Yeah. I think he impacts winning at a high level. Actually, I think if he was on the Lakers or the Nets or the Heat or any team, and the Heat aren't good, obviously, but I'm just teams that are good, I think he's either starts or he's playing significant minutes for them.
Do you think he plays over Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for the Lakers?
I don't know. There's just so many layers to that one.
Yeah. No, take out the Rich Paul or agency thing.
The clutch stuff.
That's
a difficult thing to take out. It's a difficult thing to take the clutch stuff out of it.
In terms of production,
I think he's probably better than KCP overall. KCP was really good in the bubble, but I would think that they would want to play Dort. I think that they would want to play Dort over him. There's also just he would probably. I mean, he would certainly take the Alex Caruso minutes.
Yeah.
But it's possible that he takes the KCP minutes too, because KCP hasn't been very good lately either. So I think that also helps. I think he's got a little more juice off the dribble than KCP does.
Yeah, I wonder about the shooting. I mean, if you tell me that Dort will keep shooting 35-36% for the rest of the season, it's just there's no question.
I mean, the point is, but he's playing with LeBron.
Yeah,
With LeBron, that's noticeably different than who he's playing with now.
Yeah, for sure. I think that tier three is, I don't effing know what they will become. That is tier three. Maybe there is a player that we can discuss earlier, that is Theo Maledon, that I don't know where to put, but I kind of know where he lands in terms of projection, because I think that if everything goes bad, Theo Maledon is a player that can play as a bench point guard for basically any team.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of was thinking about him and thought, wow, I mean, if they're able to get a team together that's good in the next four-ish years and he's still here, he's just a dude coming off the bench that's going to soak up minutes, play good ball. I mean, he's like if the Thunder got like a good version of Derek Fisher back in the day, where you just slide him in and he's just going to make good decisions. He's going to play decent defense and he's going to shoot threes. He's going to make them. I believe he's going to be a good three-point shooter in his career. I know he hasn't been wonderful this year, but I think he's going to be a really good catch-and-shoot three-point shooter as his career goes on.
And yeah, the shooting looks very good. And I think that maybe the best comp for him, and probably we already said that, it's George Hill. He can have a George Hill type career. I wouldn't be too surprised about that.
That would be amazing. George Hill's super good. He was a starter on that Pacers team that was very good. And had they not run into the Heat, they probably go to the finals. I mean, they were that high level of a team. So yeah, I mean that's great, and I think you look at that with Theo and say he might be too low on Sam's list. He's number six, on Sam's list, because I would say that Sam is leaning more And he said this, he's leaning more star potential than he is potential overall of like longevity in the league. Like if this list were, give me the list of the guys that are going to play 12 years in the NBA. I might put him 3 on this list.
Yeah.
Because I have more, and Hami's been great, but I have more hope in Teo playing 12 years than I do. Because Hami, once Hami's athleticism goes, it's over.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know when that's going to go. Baisley is still hot and cold. Pokuševski had a great game today. He's got a long, long way to go to even last the 4 years that he's guaranteed. But with Teo, you look at him and you're like, oh, okay, he belongs.
Yeah.
You just watch him on the court and think, okay, yeah, he's an NBA player. Done. Like, stamp it. He's there. Now, I think Poku has a super high ceiling, obviously. I think Baisley has a super high ceiling. Will they hit it? Unlikely that they hit it. Could they hit it? Sure. So I get putting them above Teo in that regard, but if it's just about longevity, I put him toward the top of the list.
Can you guess from the top of your head what's the percentage of Teo Maledon, the volume and percentage for Teo over the last 20 games?
4 attempts per game at 36%.
4 attempts is perfect. The percentage is 39.2.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the shooting is 78%. I think over the last 10 games, it's like 43% and 90 stuff from 90 and change from the line. From the chat, Jay says, maybe Teo is a Tomas Satoransky type. Yes, in a sense, but I see him having way more juice than Tomas Satoransky at the rim. He has a floater and he has a knack of like putting the guy behind him and trying to finish. Now he's not strong enough to be effective at the rim, but this is something where even if he doesn't have athleticism, I can bank on the fact that he will improve from a physical standpoint because he's not slim, he's not like a lanky, he's just young, very, very young. He can fill up, I think, and since he has like it's not a guy that has a ton of lift. So even if you put like X amount of muscles on that body, I don't think that you really change the type of player that he is. And so if you have a 6'5 guy that has like a 38, 39% percentage from three, plus the ability to hit the floater and to pass the ball like Teo has, I really think that he has an untapped potential as a point guard, a pure point guard. Then yeah, I really see him being... I really like him. When I saw him, I think that he was first round material. Sam says that he's had second round grade on him, mainly because of athleticism, I think, and the fact that he was kind of miscast in the EuroLeague, and the fact that he played in the EuroLeague. and again, it's a hard league. No one does what Luka did in the EuroLeague, and maybe if you use Luka as a frame of reference, of course. He's not Luka, nowhere near that kind of potential. But I mean, I really like him. And the more I see him play, the more I agree with Hollinger and stuff and guys like him who says, well, I don't see a rookie in that player.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I like how he plays off ball too. Because some of these guards struggle playing off the ball. I feel like it unlocked him a little bit. I think having George Hill out has been helpful. to him because he gets to play that role. And I think George Hill is a nice comp because of that, because George Hill has played on and off the ball his entire career. So I think that's super helpful. And certainly athleticism is holding him back because he doesn't flash a whole lot of anything but competence. You know, like if he's flashing anything, it's competent NBA player, which is good. Like the Thunder have needed those guys. They had lacked some of those guys. If you just injected Tao Maledon into like the 2018 Thunder, he'd play a ton, right?
Yeah. Or who knows? Who knows how a young player reacts to that environment? I mean, it's tough. Yeah. This year is special in terms of the fact that the team has a concept of playing together. Mm-hmm. And players like Maledon that knows how to play the game can thrive. If you relegate Maledon to, well, just be there and be ready for shooting. And if you don't shoot well, then it's not good and you will not be on the court. I don't know. I mean, the fact that Theo is able to show other stuff like passing, like hitting a floater, doing stuff with the ball because it's in the scheme of of every play for OKC. Now, I wanted to ask you something about Shai. Sorry for going back to him a bit.
Yeah.
Do you think that OKC plays a little bit different when he's on the court? I don't see as much movements as when basically he is either on the bench or he doesn't play. The lineup that featured Horford, Diallo, Maledon, Dort, and Bazley moved a lot more. I think that in some sense, when Shai is there, the other players kind of wait for him to do something instead of playing in motion. And I wonder if this is good or not. I think it's not very good. And I wonder if the team can play kind of with the same style, even if Shai is there. Just allow him to be the player who finishes the play, but maybe the one that gives the ball up early and then gets it back and do damage later in the possession.
I mean, I think that they're trying to let Shai spread his wings in those moments. Mm-hmm. And I like that because I want to see what he can do. I want to see what he's capable of. Because if he is going to be a number one or number two scorer on a team, you have to give him the chances to do that and to grow. I mean, you can't be like, hey, Shai, you see what Kenrich is doing? I need you to do that. You know? Like it's,
No, I didn't mean that. I meant a little bit more of movement. Like, you can get back the ball. Later in the possession, like you can initiate you do a pick and roll, then you pass the ball, you relocate, and then you maybe get the ball against a weaker defender and run a secondary action and like stuff like that.
I think it's hard to get guys that are as good as Shai and as good as some of the guys that the Thunder have had to do stuff like that. I think that's a difficult task.
Yeah, but like the best play that the Warriors run since I think 2015 is an initial screen and roll on the from the top of the key, Curry and Green, of course, and basically Curry sprints to the corner, make a screen on the way just to free up someone who is a decoy for him, then he runs to the corner and boom, he's wide open.
Yeah,
this is Curry making the entire play, even if he doesn't have the ball in his hands.
Yeah,
this is why I think that making plays, even if you don't have the ball in your hand, is something that I really want Shai to do. Mm-hmm. Because the 3-point shooting, which is something that we need to discuss for Shai, is improving a ton. Mm-hmm. He's shooting very well from three, and so if he's able to be better off the ball, I think he has a complete package because he knows how to do basically everything.
Yeah.
I don't disagree.
Steph Curry is the Tim Duncan of our era though. Like maybe. that's what he is. He'll do anything. He can do anything. He can do anything and will do anything. I think there's one guy in the league wired like that, and I think it's Curry. I think that's it. I think the list ends at him.
Yeah. But it's not a reason for like getting away our hopes that Shea can be a guy like that.
I would love that. I would love it, yeah. Love it. I don't know. I still think that he loves to cook and he wants to roast people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't want to take him to take anything away from that. Like it's good that he can cook and can take guys off the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
Just want it's him just, to do.
You have to be so, so special in order to do the relocation stuff and still remain a star. Like you have to be so, so special. The guys that get paid, the guys that get the shoe deals, the guys that are on TV, the guys that do all of that are the guys who cook. And they Shea wants that stuff, man.
I know.
And it's exciting that he wants it, but he wants it bad. And it's a great thing for the Oklahoma City Thunder that he does. Because I think it will lead to him becoming some kind of star.
Yeah.
But he wants it more than I thought he did, to be honest. Because heading into this year, I think a lot of it was, oh yeah, Shea will be anything you want him to be. He'll go wherever you want him to go. He'll play whatever position you want him to. And the more I watch him this year, the more I'm like, he's just an on-ball point guard. Like that's what he is.
Yeah. That's why I think that it's really important for him to improve on the off-ball stuff, because he has other players that can do stuff with the ball in their hands. And it's like in the last 5 minutes of the game, the ball is his and everyone knows it. And I'm completely fine. I just wonder if to start the game, he could be, because he's a big dude. He can set screens for others. OKC is playing so well. And I want him to be a little bit more integrated in the, let's just move around and find the best shot. I know that you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Shea can get any shot he wants, basically. Mm-hmm. Not there yet, but I'm of course hijacking the point of the episode. So let's go back on the list.
I think it's good stuff. I mean, because the truth is that Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is in tier one of our young people tiers. And he is likely the only one that really, really matters when it comes to the next decade of Thunder basketball. Like Lu Dort is also there, but it matters, but to a much lesser degree. The Thunder can expedite their rebuild because of Shea, and some because of Dort. But then the list is over. The list is over. Yeah, these other guys can fill gaps. Hami can fill gaps off the bench. I believe that he can now. Tam Maledon can fill gaps off the bench. And maybe even the list ends there. I mean, Darius Bazley has the potential to be that kind of guy too. But the truth is, like, it's okay that we gave a lot of time to Shea because he's the one. He's the guy that matters.
No, I understand. And really, the on-ball stuff are things that really matter.
Yeah.
The fact that you're able to beat your man and do stuff with the ball. He's able to do that. Kerr's just launching from wherever.
Yep.
So it's not that I don't want Shea to be the guy. I really want him to do that. There was a game when he took like 8 shots, and I was so mad that he did that, because this shouldn't be such a thing. It's the, you know what I mean. Let's talk a bit about Bazley, because I think that if you look at the percentage, and both from three and from two and from the line, you could be disappointed.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I thought after the bubble that he could be a 35%+ three-point shooter, which is not the case. But I do think that on good threes, he has a good percentage. Now, maybe while you talk, I'll just try to see what is his percentage on open threes and stuff like that. Because I think that part of the reason why Bazley is struggling so much is the shot selection.
Sure.
And the fact that he wants to do stuff like that. And there is no one who is stopping him for good reasons. I really think that Bazley is still molding himself into the player that he wants to be. He doesn't know yet what he does best, because sometimes he can get to a pull-up and it looks perfect. Sometimes he gets to his I don't know, layups or dribble penetration with a pass or dunk or Eurostep. And sometimes the same thing looks terrible. Yeah. I attribute that to, one, he's changing his body. B, is adjusting to being a starter and playing against starters and not against benches, which is extremely important.
Yeah.
There is a reason why, like, players like Lou Williams likes to come off the bench. Mm-hmm. And when they are in moments against starters, when the game matters, they are not the same. So I really wonder if we are basically witnessing the fact that he's changing and he's adjusting on the fly, trying to do the same stuff that makes him special.
Yeah, I think, the thing I love about Bay's most through this whole stretch, and obviously like the shooting splits are kind of scary, 39, 29, 76. It's like, oh, ugh. He remains pretty confident through that, and is still taking shots and is still taking threes, which I say, keep doing it. It doesn't matter what you shoot this year. It just doesn't. Yeah. And I've felt that way about him, about Lou, about a lot of guys. Nathan Anderson brings up his dunking, which has been something that has increased over the last couple weeks, which I think is really important, because finishing around the rim was like his... Last year, he was like, oh, man, what a great three-point shooter if he could just finish around the rim. And now it's kind of like, oh, he's not finishing anything. But I do think it's because, he has 20 dunks this year. That's more than anybody on the team. That's more than Hami, which is something. Like, that's something that he has 20 dunks. That's great. He's got to just keep adding to his game. If he shoots a crappy percentage this year, who cares? He's still shooting with confidence. He's still taking the shots. That's what matters to me. And he will adjust. I think he's got a good enough... I think we've seen that he's got a good enough shot. And maybe he's not anything better than an average three-point shooter. But an average three-point shooter that can rebound like him, that can guard a lot of different players like him, he's continuing to get stronger, and he's going to be he can be a versatile defender. Dude, let it fly.
Yeah.
I just hope that he never becomes what eventually happened to Thabo and then what happened to Dre. I don't want this for any of these guys, even Hamidou Diallo, which it feels like it's impossible for that to happen to. I don't want that to happen to them where they get scared to shoot it. I don't see that in any of these guys. And I think it might be the most important thing for all of them this season. I think it might be the most important thing is that they just do not lose confidence.
And while you were talking, I just checked the percentage on wide open trees compared to all the other trees, and he is 34, almost 34% when he's wide open, but he shots a good amount when he's not open. And I think that it will come with time because the shooting motion is not bad. It's funky. Yes, it's kind of low, but you can improve it, especially when you have touch. Anything that Bazley has touch. So I don't know where to rank Bazley. I still put him maybe in the same tier or close to Lou Dort. I'm not ready to say that he is in a different tier. Maybe a little bit below, just because Lou's production and Hami's production are way better. So maybe he and Hami are in a tier of their own with Theo Maledon. Like close, but not in the same tier, just because one way or another, athleticism is so important. And unless you are Tony Parker or guys like that, athleticism is still very, very important.
Yeah. And I think putting him and Hami in the same tier makes a ton of sense. I think the way that Hamidou Diallo, and we've talked a lot about this over the last few weeks because he's been great. He's really played well. And even in moments where he hasn't shot the ball well, he's continuing to contribute in other ways, which I think matters greatly. So I've been impressed with him. I've been impressed with his decision-making, his passing, his ability to rebound and push, and just he just puts pressure on the defense with athleticism, which I think matters.
Here's what it is,
Darius Bazley was clearly in a higher tier than Hami last year. Mm-hmm. And Hami just got better. that's what happened here. I mean, I don't think there's any denying that. And Baze has taken a step back, and the Thunder have said this many, many times. Coach Degnall has said this. Other people within Thunder have said this, that he's taken a step back to learn a lot more. Because if they just said, hey, Baze, you are going to be what you were last year, just a little bit more, then I think that there's a chance that we could say, oh yeah, Bazley's way, way better. But they want to give him more responsibility. They want him to grow into a much better player, and they want him to reach his potential and give him a chance to reach his potential. And that's why he's taking a step back. And I think that the Hami and Bazley tier being in the same tier today could look stupid next year, because Bazley could take a leap that Hami can't. I think that he has the shooting tier that Hami can't get to. Mm-hmm. I think that he has that ability to be there. Hami, I don't think we'll get there. Maybe Hami gets a reliable corner three at some point, mm-hmm. but I don't think it goes beyond that. I'd be surprised if it went beyond that, I'll say.
Yeah, and the reason there's a couple of questions in the chat, which is very good. I mean, I really think that explaining why Hami and Baze today may be in the same tier. Now, I have basically a little bit higher, but I'm fine putting them in the same kind of level, because you need to take into account ceiling, yes, but you also need to take into account real production. And Hami has been productive, mm-hmm. and you need to take that into account. It would be wrong not to take that into account.
Yeah.
And to just say, well, basically has, I know that a guy like Baze has the potential to be way better than Hami. If Bazley realizes his full potential, then it's totally in a different tier. He may be an all-star if Bazley reaches his full potential. Mm-hmm. Hami, I don't see that.
Hami's close to reaching his full potential now, honestly.
Exactly.
He's a second-round pick. He's a guy that, when he came out of exactly. Kentucky, it was like, wow, cool athlete, was like the thought, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
How can he be?
No, and he was a five-star recruiter because of his like crazy athleticism. But sure. The point is, you need to take into account the fact that Hami is productive and he's shooting well. Now, maybe over the last five games, he's not all that great in terms of percentage, but still, he's able to create, to be an okay defender. He has been way better on defense, and we need not to take that as a guarantee. Yeah, he's athletic, then he should be a good defender. No, he's making good decision, and this needs to be part of our analysis. Otherwise, we just are watching the stars and say, well, those are high. Yes, but you really need to have also something in your hands. And basically, up to now, has been extremely inconsistent, and his percentage are just super shaky.
Yeah. Alexei Pokuševski is number five on his list. I would put Teo above him, just because Teo is more of a sure thing, mm-hmm. and Poku has a ways to go. And it doesn't mean that he'll always be there. I mean, Poku could easily be number two on this list in 4 years if these were the only players that are on it. I expect there to be other players that are on this, and him to, and like Shea to not be number one moving forward. That's my expectation. But for now, I would say like Poku has the ceiling of the number two guy on this list, and he has the floor of the number 10 guy on this list.
Yeah, and the fact that in 4 years he will be in this list, because he will be 25 and younger.
Yeah.
Whereas and Bazley will be here as well.
He'll be here. Yep.
That is crazy. The fact that Baze is 21 it will be 21 this year.
Yeah, he'll be 21 this year.
Yeah. Maladin is probably the same age as Pokuševski, a couple of months younger, if I'm not mistaken. So they have five full years on this ranking. Yeah. Like a player in 5 years changes dramatically. So like it's but back to Poku a bit. He can be in a tier on his own where he just does stuff. He can do stuff that very few 7-footers can do. But he's also extremely wild. And I think that next summer, if I have to bet, I think he will meet a trainer that will say to him, this, no. This, yes. That, no. Absolutely not. And and then whenever you do A, B, C, and D in a proper way, we look for E and then F and then all the things that you like to do. Because I think that it needs to be step by step with him. Yeah, it's like Lu Dort. Now he's hitting catch and shoot threes. Once in one or two game, he tries to take a pull up. This is a good way. You know that you need to drive. You know that you need to shoot catch and shoot threes. That is the goal. Mm-hmm. Try to mix and match a little bit.
Yeah,
and this is what Pokuševski needs to do.
Yeah,
try the simple pass. Try the catch and shoot three. Maybe you can put the ball in on the floor and take a pull-up. Period. These are the things that you need to do. Yeah. The rest, let's save it for later.
Yeah. It's a season of discovery, man, and he's a huge part of that. I think the Thunder are in this, and the Thunder always like to say that they're curious and they like to hire people that are curious, but I think that they are genuinely curious about a lot of the guys on this roster. I think Poku might be at the top of the list.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, pick one of the three. Ty Jerome, Justin Jackson, Isaiah Roby. Pick one.
To do what?
To be on the team next year. Pick one.
Oh, I'm sure that Roby will be on the team next year.
I'm just saying, if you got to choose, if they said, Mikele, we trust your opinion, and we're only going to pick one of these guys to come back. We're going to either...
Oh, I think that Roby is the choice.
Okay. All right.
I really think that there is... a stratosphere where Roby becomes a player that plays an hybrid role alongside either Beasley or Pokuševski, whatever he's able to understand offense a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And it sounds disrespectful to say that, but I just want to stress the fact that playing in the NBA is extremely hard, and you need to be very, very, very good in order to play in a motion system like the one that OKC is trying to implement. You need to have a super high IQ, and most of all, you need to be able to, you need to have the reps, and Roby is getting better at that. I think that with that touch and with the ability to be a pickle diver, I think he has a shot to be a player. Now, I said it on After Arc, I think. If he doesn't want to play in the NBA and wants to go to Europe, he can make money, like real money.
Yeah.
Because at 6'8", you play the center, you do pick and roll, pick and pop, and every team in the EuroLeague will likely have a guy like that as their starting center. But in the league, I think that with the proper mate in terms of front court, he can do stuff. And I know that Justin Jackson had a few good games. I don't know about Ty Jerome. The injury, like, history scares me. So if I have to choose, I think that Robbie deserves another year. And he clearly improved. And he clearly cares. And he seems a good guy. And so why not keeping this vibe?
Yeah. I don't disagree. I think Ty Jerome and Isaiah Robbie will be on the team next year, by the way. Mm-hmm. They both have guaranteed deals, unless they're traded. Unless, like, somehow the money, like the small amount of money that either one of them makes would help them with a deal. Ty Jerome, more significant. Okay. Pick one for, the Thunder should put a ton of development into one of these guys. Josh Hall, Vit Krejci, Moses Brown.
This is tough because I don't have an educated guess on any of these guys. Mm-hmm.
It's almost like what type of player do you like? You know,
a 6'8 guy that can do it all.
Yeah, that's so Vit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but I don't see. I don't know how it looks. I watched half a game.
How could we know? Him, right?
With his national team, Moses Brown. I don't know. I need to. I'll probably watch someday. Maybe in the summer where we don't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. The G League performance of Brown.
Yeah.
Because I want to see if how he moves his feet. Like, against NBA talent, not so well. Because this is crucial. And he needs to be able to act as a rim protector effectively against NBA talent.
Yeah.
Josh Hall, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough. I haven't seen the flash from him during the small amount of minutes that he's had where I've thought, okay. And it's almost like, okay, then I will choose the guy that I've never seen on an NBA court ever.
Exactly. If I have, like, the other two, I mean, maybe Hall, we are judging him a little bit too harshly because we really don't know.
There's not a lot to be seen from him so far. And he's super young. He's very athletic. He's got some pedigree, you know, 4 or 5-star recruit. So he's got, there's some stuff there where you're like, okay, let's give it a whirl. And he's a wing, but I still lean the guy that was drafted and the guy that the Thunder think enough of him to say, hey, we would rather rehab you ourselves and make sure that this goes well and keep you here, have you learn a little bit about the city. And I think it's obvious, it's brilliant, in my opinion, because I do think that part of Poku's struggles have been just like culture shock.
Yeah.
And if you bring Vit over here, he's going to learn the city. He's going to learn the people. He's going to learn the organization. He's going to rehab. And then when it comes time for Summer League next year, he's going to be ready. He's going to be ready to play.
And if everything goes well, he can be not at the same level, because he, like, saying that he will be like Gallinari is offensive to Gallo or to Batum, guys like that. But I think that they envision him as a player like that.
Sure.
To which degree, we don't know. If you're 6'8", can do it all. Those are the players that I have in mind. Maybe he will be like way worse than them and not worthy of an NBA spot, and you can be back to Europe and playing like that. But I think that they had that kind of player in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good. Okay. thanks so much for listening to our show and for following on the stream. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. And we will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.